What is up, you scrubbed boys? Welcome to No Holds Barred. Before we launch it, I'm going to hitch up with the word of the week. This is where we take a word that is Shakespearean, off-putting, confusing, troubling, makes you hate Shakespeare because you have no idea what it means when you encounter it for the first time. What we attempt to do is break it down, tell you what it means, and then try to sneak it past Kevin during the podcast. This week, the word of the week is nay. Nay. N-A-Y. A noun. A word meaning denial, refusal, or rejection. You will ask me if I ate that horse's buttered hay, but I would answer, nay. Here we go. Welcome to No Holds Barred, the Shakespeare podcast Shakespeare would have listened to. I'm Dan Bollier.
And I'm Kevin Condardo. This week we'll use adversity, trap tragic disaster, and guess what else Shakespeare's actors didn't clean up after themselves backstage so that archaeologists could find it during their work this month at the Curtain?
Cocaina.
But first, let's duel. In the duel, we choose three questions at the intersection of Shakespeare and the present day and take 45-ish seconds to hash out the best answer. I won the coin flip before the show, and I've elected to go first. So here we go. Ben Kramer, who is at Ben Kramer on Twitter, directed our attention to a tweet chain inspired by a BBC News article entitled, quote, "Young women should model themselves on Shakespeare's heroines instead of Kim Kardashian," end quote. At Ordinary responded to the article by tweeting, quote, "Ophelia, drowned. Juliet, stabs herself to death. Cordelia, murdered. Desdemona, murdered by her husband. Cleopatra, kills herself with snake," end quote. So, who would be your best/worst Shakespeare heroine if you wanted to top at Ordinary's list? I'll kick us off. There are certainly some options here. I don't know that this is really in the spirit of what that BBC article was about, but hey, nobody right. loves piling on more than I do, so I'm game. I would say the one that I think is most needing to be added to this list is Mariana from Measure for Measure. Okay. You know, she doesn't die, but I think using your ex's lust for a nun to trick him into getting you pregnant and then not revealing yourself until you're actually definitively with child is the type of tack that maybe trying to model yourself after Kim Kardashian may not be better than. Maybe you can just aim for Khloe Kardashian instead of Mariana. So there you go. That would be mine for at Ordinary's list.
That's a pretty solid answer there. And who doesn't love a Measure for Measure reference?
You.
On this pod. I absolutely hate them. not So speaking of things that are going to irritate the other person co-hosting, my Shakespeare heroine that I think is most likely to top this list is Tamara from Titus Andronicus. There's the face. She's a heroine to me. However, she's also an adulterate murderess who tells her sons to rape and disfigure a young woman. She manipulates nearly everyone she interacts with, and her end result is consuming her children in the form of pastry pies. So that's someone I don't think I really want to be anything like.
Although,
despite the fact that she is queen, she's a queen, and rises to power, and has in that article, it talks about, you know, yielding power, and she certainly does that, but not without taking everyone down around her.
Sure.
So I think that's someone to not model your parenting skills or life after.
Unless
Tamara.
Your pies are super, super dope. Question
or
number
the worst
two.
Pies in London.
Miranda Bishop, inspirer of Will Actually, emailed us at noholdsbarredpodcast@gmail.com to ask, which character would cause the most trouble at a wedding reception? Daniel.
Sure. I think for this, it's going to be Puck from A Midsummer Night's Dream, who generally, you know, whether or not you think he truly just mistook or is someone who loves to create chaos. Puck is someone I would I almost said would not want at my wedding reception, but then I was like, actually, you know what? I kind of love Trouble. I love the game Trouble.
Pop-o-matic, yeah, of course.
Right? But I do think that Puck is someone that is like, when you have a room full of like always the bridesmaid, never the bride, and a bunch of like just drunk dancing to celebrate good times, sure. Puck roaming around like slipping Mickeys and doing love juice in people's eyes, could be a real messy after wedding reception party.
Good God.
Yeah.
No cell phone cameras allowed.
I'll go with Robin Goodfellow or Puck.
Great. I'm going to go with Sir John Falstaff, and I'll tell you why. There are a bunch of reasons. But I think he would be the worst person to show up at your wedding or even a wedding that you were at, not just because he's going to try. He's clearly a topper of stories. So if you tell a story, he's going to try and go over the top of it and ruin it for you.
Yeah.
He's going to get super drunk. He's going to clean out the open bar, whatever there is. He's gonna,
right.
But then, most disconcertingly, the dude literally got a play where the whole point of the play is him trying to sleep with two different dudes' wives. So I wouldn't be thrilled to see him. I wouldn't be thrilled to see him, like, in the reception line where he comes down and he, like, gives a lingering kiss to the bride.
Right.
Like... Ain't nobody like that. So Falstaff, I think, would cause the most trouble at a wedding reception in
also,
a wide variety of ways.
With Falstaff, you're going to want to make sure you count the number of gifts on the table when he arrives.
Exactly. It's another reason. Yeah, he's the worst. Question number three. Finally, on the day after this month's American election, Nick Nelson, who is at Atonalist on Twitter, tweeted us to say, please, guys, the hashtag BardFlyNation needs you. Reach into your bag of lines and find us something to salve our wounds. We will do just that in our Everyday Shake segment coming up later this episode. But in the meanwhile, for the bard flies that need salving, what play in the canon would you recommend turning to find some solace after the events of this past month? For me, I'm going to say my default answer to everything that we should always turn to, and that's Richard III, but not for the reason that you may think. I'm not going to say that the president-elect is an analog for Richard III, but I think one of the larger things to look at is we're desperately trying to cling to some sense of hope, some sense that everything's going to be okay. Is that
one
you
of
look
the main
at Richard...
themes, Richard III, of course.
Well, if you look at Richard III in the context of the histories, or even all the histories, because I could have said Henry VI as well, England in this era goes through some real lousy leaders, and there are some real vacuums of power, and there are some real missteps, but they make it through.
Yeah.
No matter how awful things get in any of the way things can get awful, they yep. do make it through, and you can cling to that at the end maybe there'll be a Richmond. So I'm going to say Richard III is what you should salve with in the meanwhile.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Mostly wonderful because I thought you were going to take my answer, but it's still on the board. So I feel better, and I apologize for those things I called you after the coin flip. Mm. Sort of. So for me, the answer for this question, for my salving, I will go to one of my favorite plays and a play you might all want to start buying tickets for because you're going to see it popping up everywhere this year, Coriolanus,
mm-hmm.
Which is a play about the people versus the aristocracy. What I like about this answer and this play in the time that we are living in is that we are, no matter what side you fall on, it cannot be denied that we are in a divided time.
Mm-hmm.
And you can look at this play from both sides. And it draws no definite conclusions about either side, which I really like. There is that conflict between serving yourself and serving the people, which I think is something it's interesting to look at in politics. But the thing that really sold it for me is a quote that I found from a review. If you want to read the whole review of a production of Coriolanus, it can be found at donshuey.com, donshuey.com. Don writes, as Jan Cote describes them in Shakespeare, Our Contemporary, quote, the people in Coriolanus are stupid and ignorant. They stink and collect stinking rags in battlefields. The tribunes are little, deformed, and deceitful. Coriolanus is brave, great, and noble, but the people are Rome,
and Coriolanus is a traitor to his country. The play is deeply suspicious of both heroism and democracy, and the ethical battle between the arrogant patrician warrior and the countrymen he would rule. Shakespeare ascribes many layers of complexity and contradiction to both sides, which I think solves my wounds.
There you go. That is how we duel. If you have a question you'd like to see featured in a future edition of The Duel, please send it our way. We are at noholdsbarredpodcast@gmail.com. We are on Twitter @noholdsbarredcast, and we are on Facebook @facebook.com/ No Holds Barred Cast. Daniel.
Yes.
Shall we do some homework?
Let's.
Mortals, perchance you wonder at this show, but wonder on till truth makes all things plain.
This is the part of the program where I pull a Shakespearean homework question from the internet, and Dan and I do our best to pull together a coherent answer, no matter how stupid the question or how pressing the deadline. This episode's question comes from an anonymous Yahoo Answers user under the heading, "In Shakespeare's Othello, what was the motive of Iago?" They ask, which drove him into trapping Othello in a tragic disaster. Oh, I'm sorry, that's a question. Which drove him into trapping Othello in a tragic disaster? Update. Motiveless malignity? That's exactly what makes this plot vain and purposeless. All this tension, intrigues, and killing just culminate into emptiness. Crap! So that is the question. Dan, what's Iago's motive?
Comedy.
That's a bad motive.
Okay, great.
Or he is bad at his motive.
No, I think that, I think the most relevant motive that I can think of when I think of the text is that he suspects that Othello has sluiced his wife.
Sure. Sir Smile over there.
Right. His next door neighbor.
Yeah, he says that, but like, I've had this argument before, and I know there are people out there listening who are ready to have this argument with me. Fortunately,
right.
The most violent of them just went back across the country. But I have always felt that Iago is the least motivated of Shakespeare's antagonists. And yes, he says he has the one throwaway line that it's because of his wife. He kind of alludes to various racial motivations. He kind of alludes to the fact that Othello has status on him. But we don't get any, there's no clear motivation. And that's why when people, like, you know, people always say that Iago's their dream role, and I honestly don't get it, because there are much better antagonists than Iago.
Well, I think a lot of times the people who are telling you that Iago is the dream role is not because it's all the answers are right there for you, but there's so much room to play and to create and come up with.
But there's a difference between, you know, between a way to make options and just ambiguity.
What do you mean by ambiguity?
I feel like there's not enough here to really grab onto. In none of the productions I've seen have I ever been like, oh, I get it now. I that was a really great choice that guy made to clarify Iago's motivations.
Have you seen that in other productions for other characters?
Well, I have no character that I've been so passionately against, so I guess no.
Okay, great. Well then, do you agree with this user anonymous that this is completely flat and uninteresting, basically?
Well, I think it's not that it's flat. It's that I feel like it's, I don't know. I want more. I want there to be more for Iago to grab onto. Well, okay, so we're getting away from the purpose of the segment. So if we had to answer this as a homework question,
right?
I would say there are many. Okay, so I'm going to be optimistic for a second, as is my as is my dominant character trait. I'll be optimistic,
as witnessed by
no one. So if I was going to say, Iago has several motives that he could use to motivate his motivate him to trap Othello in this tragic disaster. So the three, if I had to pick three for our standard AP approved 5-paragraph essay.
Right.
I would say yes. Wife sluicing.
Right. Jealousy.
Right. I think that's all tied into the same that Othello made him a cuckold.
But jealousy in that, and also jealousy of if you're going to go for a broader. Oh wait, maybe that's it. Maybe jealousy is the answer. Jealousy.
Just jealousy across the board.
And then the first paragraph is jealous of his lover. The second is jealous of Cassio, and the third is jealous of Othello himself.
Cassio. Oh, I see. Oh, I
because Cassio gets Cassio gets promoted over Iago.
Well, I was going to say, I bet you could come up with three things Iago is jealous of Othello about. About his sexual prowess vis-a-vis his wife that he assumes.
Right.
His status, his station, the fact that he is above Iago. Right. And his prowess and as a soldier.
And Othello his success is in battle?
Yeah, because Othello is unquestionably a better soldier than Iago. Right.
Or so more maybe to extrapolate that a little bit farther and make it more personal, is it's not just that he's better in battle, but that yields him higher favor in the public's eye.
Sure, so more popular, more famous.
Right, right.
Okay, so there you go. So it's maybe that's all right. So that this is more interesting already. So that it's this jealousy. So it's not one specific thing that he's jealous of. It's this overarching jealousy that Othello is just better than him at everything.
Right. Which actually helps understand, helps rationalize that line, I hate the more.
Yeah.
Like, I hate everything about this guy.
Right.
I hate that he's better than me in bed. He's better than me in the war field. He's better than me.
With the people.
Just, yeah. You know, like, this guy... He's got what's the phrase you use? A horseshoe rammed up his
A horseshoe rammed up his ass. Yeah, he's just lucky. He gets lucky every step of the way. He's had every break.
Right.
Everybody wants to, I'm trying to think of something that won't get bleeped, but they're all bleepable. They're all bleepable. Yeah,
we got a couple bleeps in here already, so.
Yeah. So okay, so there we go. So jealousy, and then you break down in the three paragraphs the different avenues of jealousy that Iago is dealing with. I'll buy that.
I'll buy it. I'll take all right. That.
Neat. There you
Five
go.
Points.
Anonymous Yahoo Answers user for your anonymous homework. That
Love
is
it.
Iago's motivations. And for those of you you Iago lovers, I assume there aren't many because if you've made it this far to be listening to a Shakespeare podcast, you probably agree that Iago is overrated. But if there are any Iago lovers out there, let us know what you think and tell me I'm wrong. I'm just healing now. I'm angling
You're
now.
Healing the wounds, solving the wounds.
Yeah, so come at me, bros. All right, let's do some everyday shakes.
All right, let's.
This is the section of the show where we pull a phrase from Shakespeare and show you how to use it in your everyday conversation. This week's phrase is "Sweet are the uses of adversity," as featured in Act 2, Scene 1 of As You Like It. Let's turn it over to Dan to give us the phrase in context.
Now, my co-mates and brothers in exile, hath not old custom made this life more sweet than that of painted pomp? Are not these woods more free from peril than the envious court? Here feel we but the penalty of Adam. The season's a difference, as the icy fang and churlish chiding of the winter's wind, which when it bites and blows upon my body, until I shrink with cold, I smile and say, this is no flattery. These are counselors that feelingly persuade me what I am. Sweet are the uses of adversity. Which, like the toad, ugly and venomous, wears yet a precious jewel in his head. And this, our life, exempt from public haunt, finds tongues in trees, books in the running brooks, sermons in stones, and good in every thing. I would not change it.
Thank you, Daniel.
Yes.
That is, sweet
yes.
are the uses of adversity, as featured in Act 2, Scene 1 of As You Like It. So, to give a little context on this scene, this is the first time that we meet Duke Sr. in As You Like It. At the beginning of this play, we've started in court, the court being presided with Duke Sr.'s usurping brother, Duke Frederick, who has who Rosalind and Celia have escaped for and run into the woods. We've heard of Duke Sr. and his band of exiles, but this is the first time we're seeing him compared to Duke Frederick's court, where everybody's like afraid of this overarching thing. Duke Sr. and everybody are just hanging out in the woods, and they're like, you know what, this is kind of tough, but we're going to make the best of this. Yeah, and so that's where this are. So this, you know, the adversity that they're facing is exile, being homeless, being out in the woods. But, you know, he's finding the silver linings of all those things.
Right. Yeah, that's it. Nailed it. So if you had to kind of rephrase the sweet are the uses of adversity, for me, I think something like when the going gets tough, the tough get going.
Mm-hmm.
It has that sort of feeling, right?
Yeah, it's like there's a lot to be discovered if you don't just, you know, when you go up against a roadblock, if you don't just give up,
right?
You know, overcoming that challenge, there's a lot to be discovered in that. And I think this is, you know, obviously this is directly applicable to there are a lot of, you know, we try not to get too political on this, but there are a lot of people, probably the majority of people who listen to this podcast, who are feeling a lot of adversity right now.
Sure.
In the state of our country. And I think it would be easy to give up. It would be easy to, you know, the Canadian immigration website was overloaded on election night. People looking to flee, people looking to give up, people looking to disengage. But I think this quote is important for us, especially those of those individuals who are in the artistic community.
Sure.
That this is really hard, but it's also an opportunity to change things through.
Right.
That's what art is for, right? That,
right.
You know, a lot of people are scared. A lot of people want to cover up and disappear. But if we do that, then it's all lost. You know, it seems overwhelming, but when it throughout history, when society looks like it's about to topple over, that's when art is most important and most valuable and most effective. And I think that's what they're talking about here with this line.
Right. That's beautifully well put. I think that also goes back to the question earlier in the pod from Nick Nelson, looking for that salving. Outside of that, any other thoughts, any other moments you can think of for this line on more crazy occasions, on lighter occasion?
Think there are more crazy occasions.
that's fair. So one of the things that I thought about when thinking about this line is growing up, I grew up in a cul-de-sac. So, you know, our house was at the end of the road, which is also in New Hampshire, where it snows all the time, or at least it used to in the winter all the time. And we would just get piles and piles of snow pushed down the street and then just kind of deposited in our front yard because that was the end of the road. And it's like, yep, there it is. Now you have a mountain of snow. And it's like, you know what? King of the mountain.
Yeah.
Stinks having an 8-foot pile of snow in our yard, but let's play.
Yeah, I mean, you know? It's kind of like lemons out of lemonade, I guess, right?
Right.
But, you know, that if you're not, you know, it's like, don't give up. It's an optimistic take that you kind of need.
Yeah.
That like, yeah, you could just roll over and die and not get out of bed, but like, use it.
You know, right.
It reminds me of that monologue from, have you ever seen The Thin, or The Third Man?
No.
It's that old Orson Welles movie from the 40s.
Nah.
And Orson Welles has a monologue where they're like, everything kind of sucks. And I actually pulled it up because it's what, I love it. Where so Orson Welles has this monologue. He goes, don't be so gloomy. After all, it's not that awful. Like the fella says, in Italy, for 30 years under the Borgias, they had warfare, terror, murder, and bloodshed. But they produced Michelangelo, Leonardo da Vinci, and the Renaissance. In Switzerland, they had brotherly love. They had 500 years of democracy and peace. And what did they produce? The cuckoo clock. So
that's great,
you know, but it's true that it's like without that conflict, without something to rise up against, to push you, to be driving you.
Right.
Without that adversity.
Right.
You get the cuckoo clock.
You get the cuckoo clock instead of Michelangelo.
Yeah. And he's my favorite Ninja Turtle.
That's I was going to say.
Donatello is my favorite Ninja Turtle.
Oh, come on, man.
Dan, favorite Ninja Turtle?
Michelangelo.
Of course.
Pizza, cowabunga.
You party dude.
Orange. Oh, yeah, I'm totally a party dude.
Oh, there you go. Sweet are the uses of adversity. Let us know how you use it in your everyday conversation. All right, let's bring this stupid thing home. Banter, corrections, sure. Plugs. I think our first correction is I don't think we've done one of these in about 6 months, it feels like.
It feels, yeah, right?
As evidenced by our ring rust, I think.
It feels, yeah, it feels, this one feels a little interesting. I'll go with interesting to be kind. But yeah, it's been a tumultuous couple of weeks in a lot of ways. So here we find ourselves.
Yes, we apologize. We still have some catching up to do, but we'll have these two episodes out as everybody heads out for Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving, Americans.
And others, I guess.
Well,
happy our Thanksgiving.
Happy American Thanksgiving, non-Americans.
We're celebrating and hope that you are too.
And we will keep endeavoring to catch up. We will get back to our number.
Yeah. I'm pretty much through. I know you still have a little ways to go. But having both been out just straight out, it's been a slog.
It's nice to see you, Dan. I've seen you once in the past month, and it was when we recorded the last episode that we did.
It is nice to see you.
Good to
see you. Also, speaking of missing people, I'm just going to give a shout-out to our Twitter nation and say, hey, Twitters, where are you? What's going on? Why didn't we get more tweets being like, hey, No Holds Barred, where's our episode?
Well,
that's part of why I think it took so long, because we were just waiting to see, and we couldn't wait any longer because we missed you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Listeners, Bard Flies.
We were playing hard to get. That's it. Yeah, that's the ticket.
Right? I've just been waiting to record this every day. I've had 5 hours put aside every day. Just waiting for a tweet, a friendly what up, a hello.
Well,
all right, 5 hours, what I wouldn't do for 5 hours of anything right now.
Seriously. We did get some tweets. MJ Brady, who is at Buffalo MJ, tweeted us to ask, is there a reader's copy of Jonathan Bates being Shakespeare? It sounds like a great work.
I don't believe there is.
Womp.
It is a great work, I'll tell you that. It's a fantastic work. There may be an archived film production of the original Simon Callow production. I think that's out there somewhere.
Online or like...
No, I think you can buy it on Amazon.
Oh, okay.
I don't know that to be true, though. Mm. I would... we can do some research on that. Mm. However, I would say that I would send you a copy, but I won't. So there's that.
Sure.
But, it's the sort of thing where... friend of the pod, Jonathan Bate, is tremendously responsive. And if you reach out to him, he's not that hard to find in the digital age, and said, hey, I'm just a passionate lover of No Holds Barred and Shakespeare. Can I read the script?
I heard about the show on at No Holds Barred.
Yeah. At No Holds Barredcast.
Right.
Shit. Yeah. We'll do that later. There's a bit we do at the end where we talk about the name of our Twitter handle. And then I yell this great y'all. Wall. That was from the last episode.
Sure.
You can reach out to Jonathan, or you can send us, I don't know, $20,000 and we'll come and do it in your town. And I'll just, that all will be well.
There's not much we won't do in your town for $20,000, but yes, this play would be one of them.
I made that mistake at a party once, saying what I would do for $20,000, and I think I stopped the party.
That's actually true. That's a great joke that no one will get. thank you, everyone, for your iTunes ratings and reviews. We are up to 37 reviews and 69 ratings, which we are incredibly thankful for. But we would love to keep those ratings at least consistent with the number of episodes we've had, which is actually why we took a few weeks off to give you the chance to catch up.
Also true. That's why we did that as well.
One of the newest ratings that we got that I just wanted to read is from iTunes user KMLTML under the heading, Where Art Thou... Not listening to this podcast. They write, I love this podcast. It's funny and there's lots of Shakespeare. Where else would you find out the real definition of wherefore? Literally nowhere. That is what we are for. Please give us more ratings and reviews. We could really use them and we'd appreciate them.
Yeah, really. Thanks, Kimmel Timmel. Really like that. Speaking of reviews, I'm going to give a huge congrats to the cast of Lear, which we just closed at Seven Stages Shakespeare Company, and throw out some love to friend of the podcast, Michael Curtis. You can find Michael's reviews at caughtintheactnh.blogspot.com. He wrote a wonderful review of Lear. I won't read the whole thing here because it's quite thoughtful and in-depth, but I will read one of my favorite sentences or two. Oh, Dan Bollier is Lear's most excellent director. I say this without hesitation, not merely because he's totally wired into how best to bring a concept for a show to life, but because of what he's willing to do to get this particular production to where it needs to be.
Jesus.
Michael, I would never say such a thing. I'm far too humble, but thank you for that glowing review. In all seriousness, check out the whole thing on caughtintheactnh.blogspot.com. Michael is an incredibly insightful reviewer.
Good
God. And I love him tremendously.
Yeah, well, clearly, based on all the time you must have spent buying him drinks to get effusive praise like that.
Please. Hey, Kev, where is Skylar Collins?
Who?
Right? I don't know. Have we just stopped reading stuff he's been sending in because we're trying to, like, he just disappeared? He just ran away?
I think when you...
He isn't here?
When you free...
He didn't show? From The Grinch, of course. It's from the hit holiday movie, The Grinch. If you haven't seen it, I might watch it probably.
It'll be on in half an hour. No, I don't know. Ever since you dropped your 8 Mile off-the-cuff sonnet, I haven't really heard much from him.
Another battle won by your boys here at No Holds Barred.
Nice.
Skylar.
Way to really endear yourself. You read a review about yourself and then spike the football about a listener that you scared away. Are you proud of yourself?
Gifts that God gives.
It is my burden to bear. I have nothing else. Do you have anything else?
I just want to give a shout out to episode 76 and just say, hey, only 1,700 to go until the big
till we can be done.
76th episode.
All right. That's enough of that. Word of the week. I don't know. I got nothing.
It was nay.
Wonderful.
You know?
Nay.
There you go.
All right. I can't deal with you anymore.
I understand.
Please, folks, subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes. Please help us stay in that top 200 of the performing arts podcasts. We understand that perhaps if we put out episodes more than once every 3 weeks, you'll rate and review us more frequently. So we will endeavor to do that if you endeavor to pick up your end of the bargain. To keep in touch with us until next time, you can email us at noholdsbarredpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @noholdsbarredcast, or you can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/noholdsbarredcast. So on behalf of the Seven Stages Shakespeare Company, oh, shoot. We forgot to see if actors back in Shakespeare's time would also leave their opening night flowers in the green room until they calcified rather than actually cleaning up after themselves.
Well.
We'll try harder next time. Till then, my name is Kevin.
I am Dan. Enjoy your stuffing and your sauce of cran. Adieu, adieu, adieu. Adieu, 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 adieu.